First of all, I want to thank you all for coming. My name is Scott McGowan. I'm going to be acting as the moderator today. Good God. I'm coming here pouring water into the microphone. Thank you, Gonzo.
No buffet?
But yeah, today, essentially, we're here to discuss how to use Web 2.0 as a marketing tool. And I guess first the operative question is, what exactly is Web 2.0? And there really is no real definition of it. It's kind of a slang term, if anything, adopted by net professionals. So we're going to start off answering that question during the introduction. So I'm going to start down here with Matthew, and they're going to introduce themselves and tell us what you believe Web 2.0 is.
Well, my name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. I'm here today at this panel, at least, in kind of a dual capacity. For my day job, I'm the community manager for the Greenhouse, which is part of Mahalo.com. Mahalo.com is a new startup. It's human-powered search where we're looking at the, if you've heard the term the long tail, which are probably a bunch of pretty savvy people here, we're looking at the fat end of the long tail, the top 20,000 search results that people are always looking for. And delivering them as pages that are spam-free and high quality. And what I do is manage about 1,000 people who remotely create these sites for us. We pay them and give them credit. And so it's kind of a cat-herding job. It's kind of a social networking job. It's kind of it's management, but virtual. And I'm also the author of the book Brave Men Run, which is a pretty popular podcast novel and other things. And so I can kind of approach this from how I've used it and why even having celebrity on the internet is important to some people. Why maybe I could even address why maybe it isn't important at all. And what is Web 2.0?
Yeah. What is Web 2.0?
It's a phrase that Tim O'Reilly came up with a few years back to have a convention. It's also maybe the more interactive aspects of websites. Things like Dig. So social networking is 2.0. Sites like Flickr would be Web 2.0. High on the interactivity, high on the user engagement, that kind of thing.
Gonzo?
My name is Jim McAnally. I am a internet marketing consultant. I specialize in creating communities. I've worked on a couple of communities that you probably, you may have not heard of, X-Peeps and PornoTube. I also own several communities, one of which we just launched last night, which is called consluts.com, which kind of fits in with the genre here. I also have some regular stuff. I don't have a book or anything, but I have a couple of WordPress blogs. And I think my friend Kevin Rose, who is the co-founder of Dig, described Web 2.0 best by saying it is purely user-generated content.
Scott?
And, I got really out of control last night, so I won't answer many questions, so you don't have to listen to this, but I'm Scott Sigler. I put out 4 podcast novels, release about, 40 minutes a week until the book is done. Usually takes about 20 weeks or so. The first one was Earthcore, which generated a bunch of listeners, and we got it into print. The second one was Ancestor, which had more listeners. And when we got this one into print, we used social networking and all the people into the book to make it hit number 7 on Amazon.com. And it was number 1 in horror and number 1 in sci-fi. And I'm probably on the world's smallest publisher. So without any marketing money, any media coverage, any kind of support like that, we hit top 10 on Amazon. So that was pretty cool. So I also agree with Kevin Rose's assessment. I talk about this in my day job a bit. Web 1.0 is where the webmaster creates the pages and everybody goes and looks at the pages. Web 2.0 is something where the audience has the capacity to modify that page in one way or another. And it's usually largely unstructured and anybody can come in and do whatever they want. Wikipedia is the best example of Web 2.0 in my opinion. Wikipedia people don't really do anything other than set up the programming. It's all community-based, and it's all run, and all the pages are created by whoever wants to create them.
Okay, and just a brief introduction of myself and how I see Web 2.0. First of all, I'll just say it. I think that Web 2.0 is kind of a cliche, to be honest with you, but it's a very, very useful cliche to anyone who is interested in marketing anything whatsoever. As far as my background, I've essentially been a professional blogger. I've worked very closely with communities, one like XPeeps, for example. And I've done some publicity consulting on the side where I try to utilize blogs and things of the sort to generate buzz about my clients. So, all right, well, we're just going to go ahead and kind of dive into this. And I want to start by talking about blogging. Now, blogging's been around now. It's been a craze now for at least 5 or 6 years. But only recently are people really starting to use it more and more for commerce purposes, to drive sales. And I know in some senses those are words like advertorials and things like that.
Splog.
Yeah. So you guys tell us a little bit about that. One, how can you utilize it properly? And two, what's the downside of it?
How can you utilize an advertorial or a splog properly? Be completely, totally, utterly upfront about it. Make sure that, just like in a magazine, when you see, oh, this is an interesting article, and it says advertisement on the top of like the 5 pages that this advertisement takes up, that's an advertorial, and you'll see a lot of that on blogs, on websites. And the key, you know, you got to be honest with the people that are going to be seeing that. And why wouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you want them to know that you are the person trying to sell this thing? However, we see it a lot where an advertorial or a splog is just set up with maybe content that's scraped from other legitimate sites and is just used to generate links and revenue, visitors for the ads that they'll have on there, related or not. It doesn't necessarily mean it's an evil thing, because if you are promoting something, you want to push something, by all means, write about it and make it interesting for people, and just be clear about it. Just be clear and honest with the user. I don't know if you want to take questions already.
we'll do it, I promise you. Basically, when we transition topics, I'll probably start taking some questions, and then we'll do it that way. You guys have anything to add to that one?
Really just the whole Web 2.0 social networking scene is all about transparency and honesty, as Matt described. It's everybody's finding that the audience is largely forgiving of everything. No matter what you do, the audience, as long as you tell them, I'm now going to start talking about, you know, certain mattresses because they're paying me a lot of money and I want to make more money, so I'm going to tell you guys about it. I'll talk about that at the end of the podcast, so you can skip it if you want to, but this is how the bills get paid. You know, that's a different approach to advertising that wasn't done 3 and 4 years ago. And you do that now, and it's just unbelievable that there's never any negative feedback from the audience, no matter what you're advertising, what you're talking about, as long as you tell them up front. So if you're transparent with everything and let everybody know what you're doing, why you're doing, who you're doing it for, you can get away with, you know, whoever wants to give you money to do stuff, you can do it.
You got anything to add to that, Jim?
No, I think that's pretty much dead on.
As far as blogs go, now obviously you can set up a blog on your own domain. You can set one up on LiveJournal, on MySpace. What's the most effective way there to get traffic and get eyes to what you're trying to push, be it yourself or some type of product?
I'm probably not the best one to speak to that because I have a MySpace page, but it's more of a place setter, place mark to bring people to the actual site. So I don't really use outside tools. I serve my own stuff, and so.
The two tools that I use primarily when building community, like I said, is WordPress and vBulletin. The reason I use those two tools is Google and Yahoo are very highly attuned and aware of how those tools work. So you make a post about whatever, whenever. Hopefully you're doing it very intelligently by looking at something like WordTracker, seeing what some of the higher search terms are. But you need to be aware of what you're marketing by using those tools. And Yahoo and Google index those pages almost immediately. Within WordPress's case, you can also set it up to automatically ping some of the blog directories like Ping-O-Matic or something like that, and it will be indexed throughout the web pretty quick within 24 hours.
Talk a little bit, since you hit on this, search engine optimization, stuff like that, keywords especially. Explain that a little bit and a little bit more in depth, because I think that's one of those kind of black arts that a lot of people don't always think about when they're trying to market things like this. A little bit more in depth.
I think we had a lot of people, in the last 5 years, doing a lot of what they call search engine spamming, which, you know, basically made all the engines pretty unusable. What I try to do is, here's a good example. I have a blog called B-Movie Hell. It's B-Movie Reviews. Had I not been at this convention, I would have been doing a piece on Rob Zombie's new Halloween movie, because everybody's out there looking for it. So in my opinion, I'm sure these guys know a lot better about it because they're selling hard goods, but, you know, you have to go with where the trends are at, and, you know, WordTracker is a service out there that will tell you what some of the more highly searched terms and trends are, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
It winds up being a little bit different for me because I'm selling a specific product and just talking about my own brand. So for the biggest thing that we do is cross-linking to other people who have similar content. And since we're doing podcasts, our blog is basically a vehicle for our podcast. We will run each other's promos on the podcast. So the single best way to generate increased traffic is to find other sites that do stuff similar to what you do or in the same ballpark. And then you just call them up, email them, say, let's. It's old school, it's trade links. Let me have you on for an interview. You know, let me get you on my podcast and talk about your show for a while. You'll let all your audience know that's there. You just keep cross-linking everything, and it tends to grow a larger audience.
You got anything to add, Matthew?
On the subject of SEO, well, not really, other than to say that a lot of the advertorial and blog stuff you'll see is sort of the black hat SEO, and there's good ways and wrong ways to do it, and what these guys are talking about, targeting markets, targeting things, and sharing links and that kind of thing, that's the white hat SEO, which is good.
And the black hat SEO, I think what you're talking about keyword stuffing and things like that.
Yeah, when you search a term and maybe you get it misspelled and you end up on this page that's just full of ads, that kind of thing.
Banner
probably
farm.
All seen that. Yeah, banner farm, exactly. That's part of that. There's many, many, many different ways that they go about it.
Take one question on this topic. We had one back here. We had a question back here. Yeah.
Where do you see sites like Dig and Delicious?
Yeah, hi. Where do you see sites like Dig, Delicious, and kind of the community bookmarking, reference type of sites working in marketing?
Well, Dig in particular is one that people are trying to use a lot. And it's like a campaign. You have to get a certain number of people to go click on something, vote in Dig, and if you can get to the front page, you know, then you get a lot of people seeing your stuff. So it's a strategy. You're gaming Dig to use it as a promotional tool. That's the only way to do it. If you happen to get lucky and somebody posts a Dig link to your stuff and it's something people actually give a crap about and goes up to Dig naturally, then that's going to be huge. The other social bookmarking things, like I'm using MySpace and Facebook a lot. I'm, you know, trying to put tools out there so that people can go expose my content to their friends that they think would like it. It's mostly just word of mouth and using those tools to facilitate it. But I don't have enough juice yet to game Dig. I've tried it a couple times and I can't get near it. So.
Yeah, to game Dig, as he's termed it, it's a community. It's another community, okay, and that's why it's so powerful, is because you have to have. It's like your buddy list or your friend list, and if you don't have enough people that are ranking your article or your link, high enough, then you never appear high enough in the search engine. So. It's kind of useless, but there is a tremendous amount of traffic out there if you're plugged into that community.
Dig and Delicious and Stumble Upon and Magnolia and all of these sites, they're really just word of mouth with, you know, writ large, you know, on steroids. So they are useful. Some people, you know, will, you can use, excuse me, I'm almost not quite as bad as Scott, but you can even schedule the campaign, to game Dig, do it early in the day because East Coast gets more traffic than West Coast. Make sure everybody is digging the exact same link, otherwise you end up with, you know, you divide up that hit. And finally, it's not gaming it if you're asking people who genuinely care about the product or the content to give you points. If you're just, you know, hiring people or offering incentives to people to do this, then it's a popularity contest and disingenuous.
All right, I want to move on into podcasting now, because obviously we have two people on the panel that have parlayed this into something very, very meaningful and successful. So, first of all, from the common person's, who's not a professional, point of view, when we think about podcasting, I think we just kind of think about somebody ranting and raving and not really doing anything productive. But if you go around on iTunes and things like that, you're finding more and more of this type of stuff, and you're finding more and more genuinely kind of old school radio content. Yeah. With things like, you know, things like this. You find a lot of older talk shows and type of thing formats. Let's talk a little bit about how you get a podcast noticed. Because it seems like you could just get lost in the sea of iTunes and never to be seen again. How do you get out front with those?
There's podcasting is really, really young as a marketing tool. So there's still a lot of kind of buddy system type stuff. You know, Scott mentioned you trade links with each other in the podcasting community. There's a lot of promotion to other podcasters, and that's maybe to a fault. Getting the word out to other podcasters is piece of cake. Getting the word out to your core audience, assuming they're not other podcasters, can be more of a challenge. iTunes, it's funny, earlier this morning this came up in this room. iTunes is a lousy podcast directory. It's really not even made to do that. It's an add-on to iTunes, the podcasting feature. Unfortunately, because it's convenient, about 50% of podcast listeners use it. So you got to know how to mark up your MP3 files, your audio files. They have tags built into them, much like tags you would use on a social networking site. So you got to make sure that those things are applicable to that episode and to the series. Naming your podcast descriptively and accurately, you know, instead of Matt's show, maybe it should be the, you know, writers talking. So you know right away that's a show about writers talking, you know, and if people are writers or interested in writers talking, they're going to listen to that. It's writerstalking.com. But seriously, that's one very key thing. That gets back into the white hat SEO. You name your podcast what it is. You name your blog post what, you know, if you're reviewing a new movie, you put that title in the blog post, in the title. So that's one way. So people searching in iTunes, they're going to see the right tags, and they're going to see the title in there. Other things, market outside of podcasting, market outside of the internet even. Networking opportunities like this, local press, other press, radio. If you have content that maybe local radio station, NPR, or something like that is interested in, parlaying your expertise in the field that you're podcasting about into other areas. And then, oh, by the way, I have a podcast. What's a podcast? It's like TiVo for radio. You should check it out.
There's two elements to it. One is exposing your podcast to people who already know podcasting. So you're cross-promoting getting on other people's shows, having guests on your show that your audience would be interested in. So if you know if you have if you've got a podcast about the erotic industry, you know, you try and get some producer who's made a movie that's big on. That's the kind of thing, because that goes into the keyword indexing, and the people who will like your content will find you if you're having the right guests on, you're talking about the right subjects. With iTunes, it's ridiculously easy to subscribe, which is why it's so popular. My numbers are like 75% of my listeners have all subscribed through iTunes. So you're going to find those people. The people outside of podcasting, any other way you can get the word out, it's not... I mean, getting the word out is important, but when they get to your site, making sure that the dumbest person in the world can understand what podcasting is and can subscribe, and getting something right up on your front page, do you want to get this content for free? In our case, it's, do you want free audiobooks? That tends to get people's attention enough to actually click on it, and then we go through, what is a podcast? And this is a paragraph that explains that. How do I get it? You have to explain it all. So that you keep in mind that maybe 5 to 8% of the population really knows how to get a podcast, at best. I mean, at absolute best. So all your marketing efforts and getting the word out, even networking things like this, you're still going to hit well over 60% of the people who may be interested enough to come to your site. And when they get there, it's your job to make it easy for them to subscribe to it.
You have anything to add to that by chance?
We don't do podcasts.
Well, not really.
It's called video on demand, but yeah. That's yeah. Another subject.
Do we have any podcasting questions out here at the moment? Okay, then we'll move on. We had to eventually come to the 8 million pound elephant in the middle of the living room here, and that is the social net. When people say social networking, they think MySpace. I think for the most part. In these times. And of course, we're also talking about Facebook and things like that. While things like Dig and other things, these are communities, something where you can throw all of your pictures and your photos, your videos, your life story, tell everybody that you're bored through a bulletin, and then show up in a group and, talk about Dragon Con. That's what social networking is to most people. So, with that in mind, how do you utilize these sites in particular to market yourself or your product? What's important?
Well, in the case of authors, what you're marketing is your name and you, more so than any individual book, most often, because you want people to be in it for the long haul for you. You want people to search for Scott Sigler, not necessarily Earthcore, because they're going to get to that and all the other content. So I use Twitter, I use Facebook, I probably predominantly those two. Twitter has turned into, I don't know if you want to call it microblogging, perhaps, and that's been very effective as a way for people to feel connected to me as a person, which is going to make them care more about the product, which is, basically stuff that comes out of my head. So it's a kind of a different situation than if you're marketing something else, perhaps. It's very, very social because the whole emphasis is on there's this guy, and I want you to know me so that you'll be interested. So constantly updating Facebook with small things. There's all those little games and clubs that people ask you to join on Facebook. You can start forums there, and again, you can have that be your forum and your user community, or you can have it go back to something more complicated and branded with your own stuff, which is another kind of important thing. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, all that stuff, they're great tools, but it's their name at the top of the web page, not yours. So you might consider making sure that there's a place people go where it is you. Just using them frequently so that people know you're out there and are reminded that you're out there. And again, in the case of where we're marketing basically our personalities, letting that personality come through, whether it's small trivial details about yourself or actual, hey, buy my new book. People care about that.
I don't use Twitter. We're nominated. Actually, what I've been using over the last several years with a pretty good degree of success is RSS feeds, outbound RSS feeds. RSS stands for really simple syndication. And you can use it the same way these guys are talking about, where somebody else has a blog or WordPress or install a vBullet or anything that will take your inbound content and use it on their site, which gets your name, your personality, your brand out in front of everybody else, their readership, by using an RSS feed. It's increased traffic to a lot of my community sites by 30-40% because people either subscribe to those outside communities or they subscribe to the raw RSS feed within the community itself.
And similar to what Matthew was saying, it's really social networking is a way for you to connect with your customers. I'll just do this one, then I'm going to cop out of this in a second. when I was a kid, I was a big Stephen King fan, and I sent Stephen King 3 letters over the course of like 7 years, and none of them got answered. Now, he's the biggest thing since the Bible. In those days, the only person who'd sold more books than him was God, basically. But what's happened now, there's a phase shift of the social networking, because I have a MySpace page, Facebook page, Bebo page, I am on Twitter. There's just regular old email. And on my website, I post all of my instant messaging handles. So there's 7 to 10 ways for anybody who's remotely interested in my work to get a hold of me. And it's my job as a content provider is to acknowledge that as soon as possible and get back to them. So because of social networking, I can talk to anywhere from 50 to 200 customers a day. And that might be a line here, a line there. But when the audience gets that recognition and that feedback, you have locked in a fan. And it's unbelievable the reaction that I get. The reason this book did so well on April 1st, it's not because I got covered in some big publication, everybody had to have it. It's because all these people that I'd been emailing and blogging with and instant messaging with, I asked all of them, can you go buy it on the same day? And thousands of people did, and we were able to do something really cool. That's what the social networking does for your product. I haven't figured out the sites themselves, how to go get everybody on MySpace to go get other people on MySpace to come listen to my stuff. There's a podcast called Keith and the Girl that does a much better job of getting people to go forth and bring you new customers. But it can be done.
Just to kind of focus in on what Scott was talking about there, traditional marketing is one to many. You're throwing it out there. Social networking allows you to, you're still doing one of you to many of them, but to every one of those people, it feels like it's one-to-one. And that's where that intimacy, that connection comes in, which makes you much more valuable to them, and them much, much more valuable to you.
Good point.
What?
No, that's a very good point.
Oh, yeah. It most certainly is. Now, let's dig into this a little bit further as far as actually, obviously the human factor is really what makes this, but people also like tools and things to play with and things like that. Let's talk about free content. Let's talk about whether it drives sales, whether it turns sales away. What's the happy medium? What do you give for free? What don't you give for free?
Brave Men Run is the first work of novel-length fiction to have a simultaneous release, initial release, as a paperback book, an ebook with no digital rights management attached to it, and a free podcast. And the podcast is still available. It's the entire book, every word, read by me, chapter by chapter. And you can get it for free, or you can buy the book, or you can buy the ebooks. To date, over the last 2 years, roughly, I have seen more income from donations from people who listen to the free podcast than I have royalties from the ebook or the book. So giving it away for free, it's not always, you're gonna get something back. Now that's the money you're getting back. But also, I think both of us can say, and my numbers are much smaller than Scott's, but still, I've got an audience that no first-time author would ever really have a chance of getting. Thousands and thousands of people globally on every continent except Antarctica who are all interested in what I'm going to do next, whatever it is. They're like, you know, almost ravenously interested. It's like, get off me. But that's what you want, right? So, and again, those are all those thousands of people that you can make those one-to-one connections with. So giving it away for free, hell yeah. Absolutely.
Think about it from a model's perspective or a photographer or something like that. Gonzo, I think you can cover this because, you know, you do your own photography a lot of times. Tell us a little bit about where that happy medium is with free content because, you know, when you're if you're a model of any sort or you're a photographer and you're looking to sell things, obviously you have to give them examples of your work.
Right.
You have to give them a reason to be interested. However, you can go too far with it, I'm sure. Tell us about that happy medium.
Well, it's, you know, without getting off the subject here, it's like a book cover or anything else. You have to intrigue that consumer to purchase something. Photography, the shots that we typically try to take, it's tough. I mean, they say picture takes 1,000 words, and that's what you're striving to do. Typically, the technique of marketing we use is kind of like the photo thumbnails, like a contact sheet, so that you can get a good sampling of, you know, what some of the girls are selling, or you know, maybe if they're selling a calendar, you give them, you know, a couple of the months of how they're posed in a bikini or something like that. Yeah, you can go too far. Then, you know, the calendar analogy is very simple, that you just give them all 12 pictures, and, you know, some guys, that's just going to be enough for you. But I think there was another point, too. If you give a lot of stuff away for free, not only do you definitely need to take advantage of the donation factor, and a lot of people will do that because they appreciate what you've done, but you also open yourself up to generate revenue through advertising, and there are advertising networks out there, and you could literally give everything away for free and
right.
make a very good living.
Yeah, get into that. Yeah, let's get into that a little bit there.
All right, the same thing. Giving it away for free and advertising are synonymous. One of the things that podcasting has done is 10 years ago, if you wanted to reach a potential audience of 750 million people with a broadcast, or even in a national audience of 100 million people, you were talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of an ad buy. It was impossible for the layman to do. Now I can post a new blog episode or podcast episode to my RSS feed, and I've got global distribution on the spot for free, stuff that you couldn't get, you know, you just couldn't get 10 years ago. So the distribution is now in place. So now what am I going to do with that? Well, there's so much content out there now because everybody can do it for free that for us to charge for it is really a difficult concept.
It's tough.
Because if the consumer only has so many hours in a day and can only listen to and or read so many books, if they can get his for free and they have to pay just to get mine or go get in a car, go to a bookstore, etc., then they're going to probably check his out first, and I potentially
don't get that customer. Why don't you do that for me, Scott? Would you do that for me?
What's that?
Would you do that for me?
Sure. No problem. So giving it away is your own free advertising. And that also gets us into, you know, the rights issue. And I've given up completely. Stuff's going to be copied. Stuff's going to be stolen. Stuff's going to be duplicated. And I don't care anymore. Because what happens if you download my book and then you... or you buy it and then you make a copy and you give it over here, guess what? I have another customer who will now go out and potentially buy my next upcoming book. So I do exactly what Matthew does. It's, here's my story. I do it a little different. I make people, you can listen to it for free. After that, you can buy it. But once I'm done with the podcast, listen to it, buy it, get an ebook. I really don't care. If you're the person who likes to sit down with the book, you'll pay for it. If not, you listen to the podcast, and I'm selling advertising against the numbers I generate on the podcast. So there's a way to get paid for everything. It's not very much right now at all, but I think it's definitely going to go up as more people get used to the concept. So you're the same thing as a radio station or TV station. They've been giving away crap for 80 years.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about quality versus quantity here real quick, because I know that in the adult industry right now there is a big question of whether or not with peer-to-peer networks, things like that, will people even pay for quality anymore? And of course the same question goes throughout the music industry and several others. Will people still pay for quality?
Yeah, there's an interesting story. There's a small publishing house called Another Sky Press, and they've been around for about a year, 2 years at tops maybe, and what they do is they'll publish a book, they'll put it online for free, so you can read like the PDF file on screen there, and if you like it, you can buy a print edition of the book, and they sell it to you for the exact cost that it takes to make it and ship it. And if you appreciate it, if you think it's quality, then you add whatever you feel it's worth. It's the user being the arbitrator of the value. It's the merit-based economy, basically. These guys have, I think, four or five titles out. A year and a half, 2 years in, they're in the black. They're self-supporting. It's happening for them. Yes, sometimes people order a book and they don't pay anything extra. And yes, sometimes people pay $10, $15, sometimes $100 or $200 extra, because they're not only supporting the work that they're buying, they're supporting the model. And more you're going to see that this is happening, that you can get a lot of stuff for free, but if you like quality stuff, you need to support the quality stuff that you find so that there will be more. You know, more and more users, customers, audience, whatever you want to call them, are discovering this and backing it up, and it's really kind of amazing. It's a paradigm shift.
Let's anything to add here?
I think it really depends also on the distribution model of how they have to go out and get something for free. I mean, on a peer-to-peer network, let's take BitTorrents for example. I mean, you know, if you want to tie up one of your machines all day downloading the zombies latest movie or whatever, yeah, you can do that. But you know, I believe that there's quality as well as a convenience factor, because let's face it, if you want to see it, you want to see it, and you don't want to mess around with your machine being all tied up, you're going to go pay for that thing because you already know its reputation. So,
gotcha. Let's talk ethics real quick, because marketing, it gets sketchy sometimes. Madison Avenue monsters they are. So let's talk about the ethics of this, the ethics of marketing on the web. Just to give an example, is it ever ethical to use a bot on MySpace to add friends?
No.
Ever. Okay. Things like that, though. I mean, it's like we were talking about the advertorials. You know, let's talk about some of the deception that some people use and the things that people need to avoid.
Wow. Well, we run across this a lot at Mahalo, because we're looking to build pages full of links that don't have any bad stuff, not just high quality content, but no spam, no deception. So we have to look out for it. A lot of, we talked about link farms and banner farms and things like that. That is one way of deceiving someone. Somebody will just scrape all the content off of a Wikipedia page, put it on their own page, and put ads up. That's borderline, because the Wikipedia is under a certain license. But the person coming to that page is thinking this is original content and original information, and that's deceptive. We talked a little bit about email and contacting people through email. That's the other thing. You know, if you build up an audience and you've got all their email addresses, you need to make sure that they understand how you're going to use that. It's not okay to just start marketing to those people just because you have their email address. They've got to know that's what you're going to do, and they've got to opt into that, or you could, go to jail. The Web 2.0, we talked about transparency and how important that is. People still will try to make an easy buck by twisting that transparency so that you think what you're seeing is the real deal, but it's scraped content, or it's a redirection to another site that just leads you to a bunch of crap, you know, that kind of thing. And in the meantime, advertising is filtered into all that, so it's showing as links and clicks for that person, and they get paid for it.
I'm sure you can add something to this, because you said, as you know, in the business that we work in, it's probably the worst of them all, as far as you know, dirty tricks. And you know, so let's talk about some of, I mean, even for mainstream people, they've got to know what not to do. So,
well, it's pretty simple. If you follow these two rules, if you're into self-publication at all, I think, first of all, you need to be honest with that consumer, which is also, you know, potentially a customer. And you need to be unique. You don't need to go scrape off something. I mean, everybody has their own personality. Let that personality shine through. If you're interested in B-horror movies, go watch the movie and review it yourself. Don't go out to IMDb or whatever it is and rip off their review. But those are the two biggest things. I mean, deception, I mean, you go to jail for spam now. Spyware is in legislation for Congress. I mean, I hate it. So if you're just honest and unique, I think that'll take you just as far as these two guys have been.
Right. Let's talk about unique content, just in and of itself, because you know sometimes people have a hard time letting loose, you know, or you know when they're trying to update their blogs for on MySpace or Twitter, you name it. What do people really need to be thinking about when they're creating content for a page like on MySpace or any other social networking site, any profile? What are the number one things they have to do on their profile? Because we all know that's the other thing. MySpace does very well with SEO stuff. I mean, God, if you blow up your MySpace page properly, it's going to be right up at the top on a lot of you know, familiar search terms. So what's important? What text has to be there? You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, for me, I'll speak personally. I try to carry that transparency over into, you know, all of that. I'm very easy to find on the internet. I'm very easy to contact on the internet. My cell phone number is on my profile pages. Not everybody is comfortable with doing that. But the core of my marketing is be accessible to my audience. And be honest and transparent with them. So, I've got a couple of sites that are sort of, like for the podcasting, various podcasts I do, I've got one site that will take you to all of them. And that's going to always be linked on profiles. You know, all the, you know, Scott mentioned there's a way to contact him through all of the IM platforms. I do something similar. Just you have to decide for yourself, and for it's going to be product specific, I think, whatever it is that you're selling, how much you want to put out there. But obviously, you want people to know that you are offering the thing that you're offering. Don't get so into, you know, don't forget that, you know, don't forget to actually sell something at some point if that's what you're doing. But it's going to be case by case, I think, and you have to decide the level of comfort that you're going to have, how engaged and in what way you want to be engaged with your users, with your audience.
I mean, for me, it's a pretty simple message. If you go to my MySpace page, you're going to see a picture of a book cover, you're going to see the friends, you're going to see a brief explanation. This is who I am, this is what I do. Here's the paragraph about this book. I go the other direction. I try and keep as little content as possible on the page. My theory of marketing tends to be keep the message as short and punchy as possible so that the consumer has absorbed that message before they really even have a chance to think about going somewhere else. So if you've got a long list of content in there, they might not get to what you want them to see. I'm not very good with the search engine optimization and the keyword linking and everything else. I've really gone just for the human element and trying to connect with people, getting them to trade off. So I keep stuff, just the facts, ma'am. That's all I put on there.
You want to add anything then, Jim?
Well, I've just begun using MySpace. I normally use XPeeps. But there's a different tactic that I've started working with MySpace, and that is there are forums and communities within MySpace itself. And you can tap into those people because they are potentially, again, if you're honest and unique about what you're doing, those are potentially brand new clients that you can also form as friends. So I try to become a little bit more active into those communities and, you know, put them on my friends list or buddies list or whatever else, which is a very good word of mouth technique as well.
Let's just very briefly, and then we're going to move into questions and final comments. As far as social networking sites, they seem to be getting so specific now. They're branching off. It's like, you know, XPeeps, for instance, which was brought up earlier, I know branched off into something called Social Kink. It was something specifically for the fetish community and things like that. So it's getting really, really chopped up and specific. How far is it going to go, and how far do you need to go in getting in this deep with these things?
I think that's kind of the beauty of it, that there is content out there for everyone, and if you are selling something specific, you want to make sure that you are targeting as tightly as possible. You know, I said this morning. I'll say it again. It's not the size of your audience; it's the right audience. You know. Television and magazine ads and all that, it's a shotgun approach where they're seeing if they can hit the side of the barn and you know maybe one or two of those will stick. But new media, Web 2.0, call it whatever you want, again, it's you have the ability to tie right to the person, sometimes right down to the, you know, five or six people who you know are going to buy that thing. So I kind of think it's a good thing from our perspective that everything is kind of compartmentalizing to that degree, because it gives you a very tight range of choices. You can be very specific with some of your marketing, and then you can broaden it out a little bit to see who else you can maybe pull into that and let them know, by the way, we're also on this site that only talks about this particular thing that we are interested in. So I see it as a good thing. You're going to waste less time sending the message to people who may not be interested at all. Question right here, if you want it.
Yeah.
On a daily basis, how much time do you spend on MySpace updating your blog?
Well, again, I don't really use MySpace itself, except as a way to get people to my own content with my own branding on it. But in terms of the social networking in general, right. I will post tweets to Twitter. Pretty frequently through the day, unless it's a crazy day with the day job, and I'll use Twitter in the day job, and you know, for my personal stuff. Facebook, I will add things as appropriate, probably on a daily basis. Email, if somebody emails me about Brave Man Run, I try to respond to them as fast as possible, no later than 6 hours from after I get that email. So it's a constantly checking, constantly. Yeah, as you do this, you kind of think, what is going to be relevant to the people who are interested in me or my product or whatever it is, and take every opportunity to reach out to them. Because the way, again, when you're kind of marketing a personality, what these people are interested in you as a person, and it's like, really is like a bunch of friends. We're all just folks, you know. That's why the title of the panel had the phrase in it, celebrity, in it. And yeah. And I don't necessarily, the whole idea of celebrity, as we say, with a W, it's kind of silly, because we're all just folks. And the ability to create content and distribute it is so open to everyone now. And we, as creators, depend on the audience utterly. So I try to treat people as friends and support rather than that's why I keep saying the audience rather than the customer or the fan.
I'll spend about 20 to 30, 40 hours a week on all the stuff together. And it's my job. I'm an entertainer. I don't even consider myself a writer. Writers tend to have in my world, the writer is someone who's taking their work so seriously, and it's a work of great importance, and this is going to change people's lives. I write monster flicks between a book cover, right? These are good time. This is escapism stuff. You read it, you learn a bunch of science you didn't know. You go, holy crap, could they actually make one of those things? It sure sounds like they can make one of those things. It's a good time. So my site, all the work I do in my site and all the connecting, the changes, adding new pictures, throwing stuff up on Flickr, Twittering people when I'm actually about to post an episode, posting to the group, emailing people, it's all about making it more fun. Everything, all the time I put into it is to just be like, sweet, Sigler's got a new episode out. I got to go check that out. This is going to be a good time. So, but it takes a lot of work. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have opinions and perspective on like a huge range of topics. And I'm kind of bogged down in getting a start because I can't decide whether it's better to specialize and brand along, you know, what I'm sort of horizontal or vertical market.
I don't think there's room for horizontal anymore. Okay. I really don't. If the day of people blogging and everybody comes to see what they're talking about on that day on any number of topics is completely over, okay. In my opinion. The more niche you can, there's two factors. The smaller your niche, the better, and the more passion you have for it, the better. Because if you spend, you know, 10 hours a week fixing up your Chevy, that's what you want to be blogging about right there, because it comes through in every word that you're passionate and knowledgeable. And if you're passionate, knowledgeable, and consistent, people are going to find your blog. And overall, like, that's the one thing we haven't touched on. The biggest thing, no matter what you write, whether you write like a second grader or you write like a PhD, it's consistency. If you put stuff out every week, every 3 days, without fail, there's a billion people on the internet and audience is going to eventually find you just through the consistency.
I wanted to touch on something that you brought up there in finding the smallest niche. We're supposed to have a guest here today. His name's Mike South. He's another adult industry professional. He had his thing where he always said, in niches, there are riches. And the reason being is because you have less competition, period. Mm-hmm. And even though it may be a smaller audience or a smaller group of people that you're trying to market your product to, it's a very loyal one usually, because it's hard for them to find quality products that they're looking for. So, do we have another question? Back here in the back, I know you were waiting. Yeah. You want the mic?
Yeah. I don't think so. I participated in a couple of alternate reality games, which I think are quite a bit of fun, and they're intentionally based on deception from the start. Help me resign that to what you've told me about never using deception.
Well, did you know it going in?
No, you couldn't know it going in if it was any good. In fact, this is part of one of the things that people on the alternate reality gaming sites will complain about, is if you know exactly what it's about going in, it's no good.
Do you know it's a game, though, or are you getting pulled into this outside of the knowledge that this is fiction?
If it's any good, you don't know for sure.
I don't know. I couldn't speak to that. That sounds pretty cool.
It sounds cool, but if how does one even get involved with an alternate reality game if they're not looking for a game to play? I don't understand.
The one for Halo 2 when it was started at the...
Oh, the I Love Bees thing?
Yeah, the I Love Bees thing. The first indication for that...
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. There was a symbol that came up and a website that said www.iloveese.com.
It's great marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And J.J. Abrams is doing the same thing now with his new monster movie, yeah.
This is a lot of fun, and you get social networks that will really support you.
The thing is, I'm not sure about that crossing the reality line, and I've tried to do that same thing unsuccessfully with a couple of my book launches. You know, how do I go make this cool and fun? And if you started following I Love Bees, you were entertained. I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff J.J. Abrams is doing, he's putting tools on the web, stuff that, you know, you want to go find the next piece of that puzzle. I don't know if anybody's really into conspiracy theories and thinking that this stuff might be real, but you, depending on how good you do it, you could get sucked into it. But that's an entertainment. It's becoming its own entertainment form, the ongoing alternative reality marketing promotion.
And there are a lot of little hints and just tricks and things that people are coming up with these days. It's like, I would just give you an example that it's completely deceptive, but it was really freaking cool. Is that there was it was for Dexter as a TV show, mm-hmm. And they had a thing where you could create this thing that it made it look like one of your friends was going to get killed by a serial killer, and it was freaking cool. And if you had somebody that was gullible that you knew, God, they were in hell for an hour. But you know, it was until they realized, oh crap, it's fake. So yeah, I know what you mean when it comes to that. Those are usually pretty harmless, though. You're not gonna, what you're describing is not gonna download something malicious onto your computer. You're not gonna end up with an endless pop-up, you know, just pop-up hell. So that's, while it is, yeah, it's deception, it's nothing malicious.
It's entertaining so, deception.
It's
It's deception in the same way that, you know, the Tooth Fairy is deception.
Yeah. Yeah, or a magic show, exactly. Yeah. I know we got it. Go ahead.
How concerned are you with copyright infringement?
Copyright infringement.
If so, what do you do to kind of...
That's one of the things I spoke to earlier, is it's not a battle that I can win, even when I get big publishing's money behind me, so I'm not even bothering to fight it. So, you know, people are... This is following sort of the Cory Doctorow model of the world. Your stuff, if it's digital, will get stolen. It will get reproduced, and it will get passed out without any compensation to you. Knowing that that is the environment, how do you take advantage of that to either embed advertising, embed promotion, et cetera, into the... That's the reality. It's at this point, in my mind, it's like, well, I don't think Oxygen's really going to work out for me anymore. You know, you don't have an option. It's just... That's the way the world works. And as far as a copyright, as people taking it and adapting it and changing it, again... There's nothing you can do about it. So figure out how to harness it. Create a fan fiction area on your website. You want to do some of my characters? Here's the official place you can go do it. Have a blast. Tell your friends all about it. Get people, you know, you can't stop it, so harness it.
You got 4 minutes left. I'll take your question in just a second. Just add on to something of that. Models, photographers, musicians, anything like that. Yeah, your stuff's going to get ripped off. So figure out a way to get something in there. A good example, if you're a photographer or a model or something, big old URL embedded on the photo, you know.
Watermarks and stuff.
Watermarks, like that, things like that. You know, if you're a musician, yeah, you want to release something that people can listen to and enjoy. But if you want to make some money from it in any way, shape, or form, you may not be able to give out full versions, downloadable versions and things like that.
Okay, I have a question kind of similar to him, that sounds like you could spend so much time on promotion that you could never get any writing done.
Hello. Welcome to my world.
Yeah, yeah, that's a danger.
Yeah, it's not just a danger, it's a crippler. It'll kill your business. Right now I'm trying to write my fifth novel, and it has taken me way longer than it should, and it's because I'm spending all of this time promoting, and now with some of the successful things that are happening, all this time dealing with this whole new world that I've gotten myself into. So it's you have to set boundaries, and as a content creator, I recommend that there is a specifically scheduled time of the day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, every day at 5 a.m., whatever. That time has to be set aside, and it cannot be, you can't compromise it. Otherwise, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any parting comments that you'd like to make, or?
Buy their books.
Well, there's always that. There's always that.
Yeah, let's get some URLs and stuff out there. Let's do some plugs.
Sure. It's mattselznick.com. You can find all my stuff there, or if you're interested in Brave Men Run, you can find out about it at bravemenrun.com. Very easy to Google. You don't have to write those things down. And Mahalo, the day job is mahalo.com. And yeah, that's everything I am is right there.
Jim?
I guess applicable for this audience. Go read one of my movie reviews at bmoviehell.com.
And, excuse me, now it's back. ScottSigler.net is the place to go. There are links to ScottSigler.podshow.com where all the free ads are. But the most important thing is on April 1st, my first hardcover comes out from Crown Publishing. And we're going to try and do kind of the same campaign we did to this one, only this time we're going after the New York Times bestseller list and not the Amazon.com bestseller list.
Smackdown.
You guys start putting a couple pennies away here and there, and then when April 1st rolls around, you guys $25, which is a lot of money to pay for a book, but hopefully it'll be sweet. And you can also hear the first four episodes of it March 1st. They'll be free at podcast. Then I'll release the book, and the podcast will continue to come out for free. So buy it or listen.
You came for a marketing, and you get spammed. I want to thank everybody for showing up. I want to thank the guests. Give them a hand.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Have a great con.